Well, sometimes they have to kill us. They have to kill us. Because they can't break our spirit.
Look, I don't have to do this.
You don't have any choice.
I'm trying to help you people. Now, why won't you accept that?
It's in our DNA. You have to do what old man says.
What makes you such a threat?
We choose the right to be who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power, Ray.
You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Anahuacis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Friends, this is your co-host, Will Bluewater. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. As Bluewater, seventh great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho.
Grandfather, teach me the ways of the old, so that I may remember who I am.
OCO again, leave to Tahiju, Tahigu. This is Will Bluewater. Sorry for the technical problems today. I guess we lost. Now, Mark, you can hear me, right?
Yep.
Okay, let's. Hang on. It's just all kinds of problems. All right, here she is. You know, I'm sorry. Blog Talk has technical problems from time to time, and let's just dive into it. Thanks for coming on again, Grandmother Robin, and I guess that Lila June's going to be reporting from the front lines of the Diamond Pipeline protest. And before we get started, Mark, did you have any news items that you wanted to cover?
No, really.
Okay. And, well, the time is yours, Grandmother Robin. What's been going on?
Oh, well, lots, as usual. I'm glad that you're covering the pipeline protests and so forth. I understand it's gotten very active out there in the last couple of days. And, there's been a lot of police presence. It hasn't been very nice.
Yeah.
I guess there's a lot of allegations that we've been doing, you know, acts of vandalism and stuff like that, and I kind of like what John Wayne used to say, and he said he was a man of honor. He says he didn't hit people or treat them badly, and he didn't do those things to other people, and he expected other people to treat him the same. And I was just watching one of his old movies, The Shootist, today, and so it's the same old dirty pool and scary cops, you know, showing up and looking like they're out of a movie, and helicopters flying below legal altitudes, and all kinds of stuff going on. And so, what do you hear?
Well, today a sniper shot the Dakota the water protector's drone out of the air.
Oh yeah.
Apparently, they grabbed a person off the lines. In the last couple of days, they've arrested a lot of people. And they're making allegations that the water protectors have been stealing things and they've been violent. Everything that has been reported stolen has been found right where it belonged. And the water protectors, there's a lot of video online. The water protectors aren't armed. They aren't doing anything violent. They're shouting at the police, "We're unarmed. We're praying." So it's quite amazing to me that this police force is getting away with violating civil liberties.
Well, I've heard, too, that they've launched a few fairly heavy-duty mace attacks and maced people with, not just these little small things, but some pretty big stuff to spray people with.
I saw the canister. It was about a foot long.
Yeah.
I think the thing that doesn't seem to really be getting out to the mainstream media is that we're doing this for everybody's children and grandchildren. Climate change is already here. And we need to be using sustainable energies, not oil and gas and fracking. We're destroying Mother Earth, and we're harming ourselves. It makes me very sad. And it makes me sad, too, because treaties have been broken and everybody's ignoring that. Sacred sites are being desecrated and people are ignoring that. I really don't understand why people are, especially the mainstream media, is not picking this up more.
Well, they're corrupt. I mean, who owns them? They're owned by the people that don't have any respect for anything, human life, planet, or anything. I mean, these guys, they have control over all the alternative energy that they've had for a while. If they were really concerned about the environment and everything, like they said, they could just release all the science right now and completely eliminate most of the pollution technology.
Absolutely.
They don't care.
I mean, we don't allow automobiles to be sold here that are environmentally responsible, and they're sold everywhere else in the world. It's pretty interesting what's happening in our country right now.
Well, 30 years ago, you used to be able to buy, you know, a car to get 50 miles a gallon, but, you know, the way the economy's planned, you know, they won't let you have much more than about 35 miles a gallon, and because they need the oil to be used to keep the supply line, you know, moving. There was, you know, Patton did something similar during World War II, which he just said, "Well, I want you to use three times as much ammo so we can keep the supply lines greased." And we're in a planned economy, just like the Soviet Union was planned all those years. And personally, I don't understand the of course, I'm going to be getting in the face of a lot of Native activists, because a lot of them seem to be, because they think their enemy is the right wing, and they get fascinated with socialism and even, you know, some communists. But, you know, they're not our friends. They want to plan everything. They want to plan. Well, they're doing it now. Back in the mid '80s, there was a KGB colonel that defected. His name was Yuri Bezmenov. And he said that he had been part of the effort in the Kremlin to destabilize the United States. He says that the plan was, he says, over the next, you know, 20, 30 years, you're going to see Russia becoming more and more like America, and America becoming more and more like Russia. And that's because we've got globalists that are in charge. And so we can't trust... You can't rely on the politicians. You know, the Democrats used to be able to rely on them, you know, for some kind of relief, but not so anymore. They're, you know, both sides are very heavily controlled by business interests, no matter what they say. And I mean, Hillary's been caught so many times saying one thing, you know, having a public stance and a private stance, and you know, so we're all wrong. So you know, always
honor. Look at the I don't think people realize, look at one of the top planks of the whole communist plan. Well, you know, one of the first things on their list is have a central bank.
Oh, yeah.
How many years have we had a central bank here in the United States, 1913 and before?
This has been going on for almost exactly 100 years now. And, you know, some people on the right wing have been hollering, hey, you know, you're very slowly being taken over. I mean, that's what the whole thing was about back in the 50s. And, you know, everybody laughed at those days. But now we know that there were people that were not loyal to the Constitution and what really being American meant. And the progressive movement, it's not progress. It's devolvement, and it's something that's completely. And you know, there seems to be a move, you know, to move things close. Well, we like the way things are done in Europe. Well, you know, that's, I mean, the people in Europe, you know, they tried socialism and figured out, well, it doesn't work. So, you know, political arguments aside, you know, it's, you know, Native people are our own. You know, we don't have anybody to back us up but Creator. And that's probably a good thing. That's probably a good thing, because it should be dawning on, you know, what I've been telling, you know, my Native friends for 30 years, that, you know, you don't have any sovereignty. That's silly. It's a silly notion to think you did. And to even to say that treaties are being broken, well, all the treaties were abrogated, supposedly, by Congress. And basically, Native tribes have about as much political power, well, maybe a little bit more than, say, a county. You know, they get block grants. You know, they really, except for the real big ones, you know, they don't have much political power, and even then they don't. And because, you know, we're only about 1% of the population. And so it's kind of sad, but that's the way things are going. And but I believe Native people, you know, when if and when all the banks fall down and we have a financial collapse, they're going to be in a lot better position to have more of a normal. Well, because their lifestyle's already low, they're not going to miss. They're not going to miss. You know,
they won't even notice, probably.
Well, yeah, you know, it's like the poor people in the Depression. They didn't know there was a depression going.
Yeah.
So, but it's so sad that we're getting no support from mainstream media, and what they do, it's just what's being reported. And I understand they're even blocking cell phones and doing all kinds of nasty things. And I've seen quite a few of the videos, a lot of intimidation. And but I guess people are getting, you know, there have been some attacks, dog attacks, and you know, hey, Germany in the 30s, what can I say?
Well, we've had a different response here because the tribes in the Northwest here just defeated back an oil train station that was supposed to be piping in all kinds of oil and gas here in the Northwest, and we've defeated that. It took the same kind of movement that's happening at Dakota Access, but it was quieter.
Oh, really? I didn't hear about that.
And I think here people are more supportive. The Dakotas, historically, the Lakota have been the battleground of America from Custer on. So perhaps that's just continuing to play itself out in some way. And yet at the same time, this particular action has brought 300 historical rivals together, tribes that never got together before, and they've come to support Dakota Access. So for me, that's a big deal.
Uh-huh.
So I read the Hopi prophecy about the four colors of man, red, yellow, black, and white, and our red brothers and sisters are guardians of earth. The black brothers and sisters are guardians of water. The Asian brothers and sisters are the guardians of air, the breath of spirit. And the white nations are guardians of fire, the spark of technology. To me, when I saw all these tribes coming together, and not just Native tribes, but also Black Lives Matter, Europeans, white activists from around the world, what I saw is that for the first time in my life anyway, all four brothers are coming together. There's a potential for healing the sacred hoop in this way. It's going to depend on how we play it out. If we can stay in balance, in harmony, in prayer, in ceremony, I think there's a great potential here for change, real change. And it's not going to be because of a government, because a government's never going to do that.
Yeah. Well, if anybody would have the perspective to see all these things happening, it's you. Now, I met you at Nauvoo, correct?
Yes, we did.
Okay, and I just out of the blue happened to mention the Rain Queen, and you came back and said, you know, well, I had just visited her. Now, you are getting around. You're doing a lot of traveling. And I really admire what you're doing. I'm glad you've got the funds and the energy to do it. And
I do it minute by minute.
Right. Well, that's just how it happens. And you and a lot of other grandmothers are doing a lot of good out there. And and that's your job. You know, when things aren't going right. It's the grandmothers, you know, they're the ones that tell us, you know, when to go forward, when to stop, and we don't give up till your hearts are on the ground.
That's right, and, you know, our hearts have been on the ground, and we still keep picking ourselves up.
Well, you're tough.
Pardon?
I said you're tough.
Well, you know, I've gotten many emails, including from Grandmother Susan this week, about feeling a little overwhelmed about all this. You know, Susan and Brad are now doing a pipeline protest on the Iowa side about this pipeline. And it's been very overwhelming. And I've gotten emails from many grandmothers in this last couple of weeks saying that they're overwhelmed and they're tired. And and yet we don't give up. We may have to hide out for a little while and rest and recuperate, but we keep on going.
Well, you know, it wouldn't be so bad. Now, I used to work in pipeline safety, and I worked for 3 years at a natural gas leak pipeline, and I know that if corporations, you know, if they will simply maintain what they've got in the ground, it's not going to be a problem. But, you know, I see it, you know, ever since, you know, I first started working. It's just the same old thing, particularly in these large public companies with a lot of stockholders. They want lots of profit, and they do not want to spend the money on maintenance because that's a drag, you know. And, you know, so that there it is, once again, greed. And, you know, Gandhi said if there were no greed, there would be no need. But you just can't, 40 years ago, you couldn't trust people to do what's right. And it's, geez, I thought it was out of control then. It's just, you know, the irresponsibility. Well, you know, here again, you know, I'm spouting off about the Constitution, but the founders made it very, very clear that the only kind of people that can be governed by a Constitution are people who are spiritual people. And so, you know, that's why we're living under soft tyranny right now. And these things usually get worse before they get better, unfortunately.
Well, you know, I do a lot. Your radio station is called Prophecy Radio, and I do a lot with the prophecies. 300 oil pipeline spills just in the last year, okay? The newest one is in North Dakota itself, in a farmer's field, 20,600 gallons of oil, just this week.
Okay. Yeah.
The prophecy in Lakota is about the black snake, and the black snake traveling down and swallowing up the rivers. The Dakota Access folks are saying Minnewachoni. Water is life. We can't exist without it. We can't drink oil. We can't drink money. It's time for things to change, and they have to change towards sustainability. One of the things that I've realized in the last year, I've heard a lot of people crying about jobs. Well, if these pipelines stop, what happened to our jobs? If we change to sustainable energy systems, all those people could go to work for those companies. It doesn't have to be an economic crisis. It could be an economic boom. And it would save Mother Earth for our children and our grandchildren unto the seventh generation. When the grandmothers cry, it's because of that. Because we're worried for our children and what they're going to inherit here.
Yeah.
I have grandchildren and great-grandchildren, and I can't imagine what my great-grandchildren are going to have to go through if we don't do something. And it's going to take all of us. It can't be just one little action here and one little action there. We all need to stand up.
Yep. Well, I think, you know, there's that prophecy that Mad Bear talked about. You know, he said at one point the Indians would be released from their reservations and they would go into the hilly country and burn tobacco and get to know each other again. Well, that's the kind of thing that happens when a state if the United States were to become a failed state, and that could happen within a few months, all kinds of things happen. They would just simply just tell the native people, hey, you know, there's no more money for you, you're on your own. And, you know, at that point, you know, all these tribes that are federally recognized and some of them really tend to be very haughty about it, and, well, I'm a full blood and you're not, and all this other kind of, all of a sudden they're going to find out, well, you know, your friends, we're going to find out who our friends really are and start being friends instead of being snotty. And not saying they all are, but I run across quite a few that are, and which is unfortunate, but it's, I just shrug that off and write that off to, hey, you know, they got low self-esteem, and if it makes them feel better to act like a racist toward me because I don't have as dark a skin, then so be it, you know, and that kind of, but yeah, the times are coming when we're going to have to depend on each other more and more, and all kinds of things can happen, and so it pays to be ready.
It does, yep. And it's a time of purification.
Yep.
a lot of things that have stood in our way are going to fall, and they need to fall. And, you know, we met at the Wisdom Gathering in Nauvoo, and one of the reasons that our World Council is doing these Wisdom Gatherings is because when I was in my 30s, I'm a mixed blood too, and my elders told me, you're not a reservation Indian, honey. You need to go out and learn from as many indigenous people as you can around the world, because every tribe has a nugget of wisdom. And the time is going to come when all those nuggets of wisdom need to be put in one basket so that we can bring it all together again. And that is this time. That's what this time is about. So when we bring a wisdom gathering, when somebody asks us to come, and we bring these elders, it's to bring all that wisdom back together so that we can put aside the historical violence and the competition between tribes and races, and find the truth together.
Exactly. And, you know, I've been at this 30 years, and it just seems, well, I know for a fact the young Native people, they're not getting the cultural education. Well, I guess it varies from tribe to tribe, and I was really surprised just for fun, I stopped at the Cherokee Casino just not too far from Fort Smith, Arkansas, and pulled up to a convenience store there just to buy something. I could tell the young lady was a full blood. And I said, hi, you know, I surmise you're a Cherokee. I said, what's your clan? And she looked at me with puzzlement and said, Native American, you know, and I mean, you know, 100 years ago, if anybody had been asked that and they didn't have an answer, they would say, well, hey, you're not Cherokee. So, it's like, you know, we knew this was going to happen, but there's, I guess things are happening. I can see that they are happening where people are waking up and learning more about the prophecies and I guess the first reaction, though, most people just really get angry, and you have to work, burn off that anger before you can really be useful. And but there's so many that are out there that are angry, and it's so easy to join up with them, and then you drift into being a bully for a while, and sometimes and. But I guess, you know, as younger people age and they come through all that anger, then they can finally get, you know, to be useful. And because a lot more is done with peaceful words than with angry words.
Absolutely. And, you know, you started out by saying something about the grandmothers are the ones who keep pulling things together. Well, there's a reason why the grandmothers and the grandfathers, the elders council, was the one who said whether people could go to war or not. Because the young ones are full of, especially boys, are full of testosterone, and all they want to do is go fight it out.
Yeah.
And that's a natural part of life. They're the ones who have the strength and the courage to go out there and work for things, but they also want to fight for things. There's nothing particularly wrong with that as long as they're willing to listen to the elders.
Oh, yeah. It's called command, communications, and control. It's in the military, it's the three C's, command, communications, and control. And, you know, from what I understand from a lot of Native history, most of the trouble and massacres and things that happened because there were some young ones that wouldn't do that. Well, they would say to their elders, well, I don't have to do what you tell me to do. I'll do whatever I want. And then they go out and do it and cause trouble. That was the ethic. And, it's just human nature.
Yeah, it was just as much the ethic on both sides. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And I get, it was, I'm not sure if that was the Native ethic, you know, going, you know, a long ways back, but it seemed, you know, by the time, you know, after the Civil War, it certainly was, and it didn't seem to be that way, you know, say back in the 1600s, but unfortunately, the Europeans, they couldn't be trusted, and at first, you know, my Cherokee people noticed that they were, the people that were being sent over here, most of them were pretty scummy. In fact, we call them the scum of the Eastern Ocean, and, you know, it was the same situation as, you know, Australia was a penal colony, and so, you know, the first whites that the Aborigines came up against were just total jerks, and a lot of them vicious, and, you know, so it wasn't, you know, it wasn't like, you know, Europeans and indigenous Americans really had any kind of a honeymoon. Well, I guess they did have a little honeymoon period, but, you know, with the Pilgrims, but once the Puritans showed up, that was over, and... in the Bible, you know, in the Christian Bible, you know, God himself says, you know, there's never enough to satisfy people. They can never get enough.
You know, Nancy Ward was the last beloved woman of the Cherokee, and Nancy Ward actually helped the settlers until they killed her husband.
Yeah.
At that point, she became a warrior too.
Yeah. Well, how about the 16 or so Cherokee that came in under a flag of peace, invited into a cabin, and then one of John Sevier's, later he became the first governor of Tennessee, one of his men hung some of the leaders, burned the rest of them to death, and basically they just got a slap on the wrist from the Continental Congress. But I mean, it's just awful. It's just terrible. And you know, the Bratton massacre was, you know, I mean, Mormon people were taught to be the friend of Indians, but then they got out into Iowa and Nebraska, and the Mormon cow, you know, got loose, and it was an emaciated thing. It wasn't being taken care of. And after several days, you know, in the Indian camp, they ate it. And so, you know, Mormons get mad. They call in the army, and the war of the Mormon cow, the Bratton massacre. It's just It's just so sad. And the other thing that's so sad is the same thing we're seeing today is that the police and the military are seem all too willing to pull out all their guns and like they did at Wounded Knee. And because some, you know, one deaf guy didn't understand what was going on, and you know, a shot went off, and but so they opened up with the Hotchkiss guns and the Gatling guns.
Yeah.
And you know, today, you know, they've got other things like they've got, you know, sound weapons that'll you know, they'll make you feel like you're on fire or so much noise or whatever, but it's still inhumane. And I was looking at some of the pictures today. There was a guy, you know, head to toe in woodland camo, and they've got masks and balaclavas. Well, you know, aren't there laws about people, you know, walking around, you know, with, I know you can't go into a bank if you're wearing a hoodie and even sunglasses, but, you know, the cops are there. I mean, what are we becoming, Mexico? You know, all their Marines and Army, they're all wearing balaclavas. Well, you know, now they got it here, you know, so people wear those, and they're gonna think that they can do things with more impunity. It's just a, you know, you cover your face, you think that you can do more evil and not get called a task for it. And, wow.
Well, Blue Otter, remember, I don't know, one of the things the Hopi said about the last world cycle, the third world, they actually said things got so bad that, you know, Crater just decided that was it and cut their timeline short.
Yeah.
And but they said that they had a what we would probably call a UFO technology, and they were flying in to a city, attacking, destroying it without even being seen, and out. This was the kind of stuff that was going on. So I would guess that there were probably people like all of us sitting around back then having similar type of conversation about the way the world was headed as what we're talking about tonight. But they were back in the third world, getting ready to go through the change or purification or whatever and enter into our present fourth world. So we're probably going to see it again here.
Yeah.
Well, Creator keeps giving us chances. Chances to make things right. There are a lot of people that are waking up around the world. And, you know, when you consider 6 billion people on the planet now, it's not any more 6 billion, okay? But I used to have a day job in Maui when I lived there. And in 2010... was a concierge at the big music. And people would see my tribal tattoo and start asking me questions. Now, up until 2010, questions were something along the line of, oh, you're Indian? Oh, that's nice. And that would be the end of it. From 2010 to 2012, people started asking me, so what do you think about this 2012 thing that I keep hearing about? Is it the end of the world? I tell them, no, it's the end of a cycle. And when the Mayan first rediscovered their language, they thought it was the end of the world. That was back in the 80s. But now they've come to understand that it's the end of a cycle, and the cycle is a 26,000-year cycle of fear. And the new cycle has the opportunity to be a 26,000-year cycle of love. But we have the choice in that. Nobody else has that choice except you and me. And for us to be awake, we have to step from fear into love. Well, how do we do that with all this stuff going on? What I see happening at Dakota Access and on the Iowa side is that people are staying in prayer. They're standing in love. They're not standing in violence. That's the opening that we need. The people who are waking up now are looking for ways to act from love instead of from the source of fear. Fear is the darkness that's covered this planet forever. If we can possibly step beyond that, step from the place of there is never going to be enough to the place of there is enough. There's enough for everybody. And how do we do that in a good way that honors everybody's differences? If we can find that way, I don't think we have to be destroyed.
Yep.
On the other side of it, Mom can scratch us off her back like a dog with fleas anytime she wants.
Yep.
So it's our choice. Nobody else is going to make it for us. No government can make it. No corporation can make it. Only we can.
It's true.
Well, what you're saying reminds me, too, of one of the other things the Hopi elders said in our fight here. Is they said, we can't force our belief or will upon another person because that's the source of the problem. The only thing that we have to fight with is going to be the power or energy of truth itself. And if we figure out what the truth is, you know, it probably is very simple. It goes back to what the Lord of the Wind and the Water said. There's the path of the law of the jungle, and there's the path of peace, love, and all that. And there are people on the planet, and always have been, that want to be above everybody else and have the rest of us fight each other so they can run things. Once we learn the truth of that, and then we decide that we're all just going to work together and do that, then it's game over for them.
You know, we probably all know Black Elk's prophecy and also Wovoka's with the ghost dance. And both of them saw the Tree of Life and people dancing around the tree. And the first interpretation was that if Indian people danced to the Tree of Life, then all the white people would disappear. And all our ancestors would come back. But obviously that didn't happen. What happened was the first Wounded Knee massacre. So since then, the elders that I've known have been working with those prophecies. And they've been trying to take them deeper and see the deeper meaning of it. And about 20 years ago, some of my elders up here, one of them was Kaka of the Hopi, another was Fred Beaver Chief Jameson of the Lummi, and there were two or three others. Humbot's men was there, actually. And they were all sitting around the table, and I was privileged to be sitting listening. I had nothing to say. I was just a puppy then. And they said, well, I think what's going to happen is that the day is going to come when people with red hearts, not red skins, will dance together. They'll dance for life. They'll dance for gratitude. And if they do that, there may be a dimensional split on Earth. It may be that those who live in fear and those who live in love will inhabit the same ground here, but they won't even see each other. Well, I heard that, and I really took it in, and I have experienced since then being invisible in very violent situations where I could have been really hurt. Instead, I was just invisible. Nobody saw me. Okay. But what I've come to is that I don't want to leave anybody behind. So my prayer constantly is help everybody wake up to love and step out of fear. I don't know if that can happen, but it's surely my prayer.
Well, I think it will happen. It's just a question of time.
So I wrote a prayer this morning, and if it's all right, I'd like to share it now. Is that okay?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. Pray for the waters. Pray for our mother. Pray for the winds. Pray for the fires of peace and community. Pray for a spiritual awakening for those who live in fear, greed, violence, and destruction. Great mysterious one, hear your daughter's prayer. I am but one small whisper in the voice of the world, yet I am one with many voices. Today I give thanks for the water that gives us life, the raindrops that become the running waters that sing their way to the mighty ocean's roaring waves. Today I give thanks for the breath of spirit that breathes us to life, the silent exhalation that the trees breathe in, the small breeze that is the kiss of a hummingbird's wings filling the sails of the clouds till they blow a hurricane upon the waters. Today I thank the dust of this beautiful star, my mother, the earth, that births life in our bodies, supports life through her abundant birthing, makes mountains of molehills and molehills of mountains. Today I give thanks for the spark of life that erupts in fiery inspiration, becoming the hearth that warms community, that rages in passionate purification, burning through all that no longer serves. O great ones, ancestors, star beings, you who walked the path before us, teach us now. Show us the way forward. Help us learn from our mistakes. Lead us to right thought and action. Leave no one behind. May we open our eyes to our communal grief, open our hearts to the cries of our children and grandchildren, weep with our grandmothers and grandfathers, washing ourselves clean from the withheld pain of our denial, that we may see clearly the dark terror that has held us spellbound. May our tears set us free. In freedom we stand. In gratitude we walk. In humility we serve all life. In unity we speak. In harmony we sing. In joy we dance. Together we pray. Today, tomorrow, and for each day to come. We are the ones we've been waiting for. Hiechetu alo. Wokila.
Cool.
Nice.
Good poem. Good poem. Yeah, it's for some reason, while you're reading that, I started thinking about lawyers. And don't ask me why, but I guess there was a time, 20, 30 years ago, Native kids, a lot of them started going into the law, and which is really important. But, geez, it's getting to work. It was hard to find an honest lawyer before. And, I just can't believe, I know what happened with Aquaval. We hired an attorney. And the founder of Aquaman knew this guy was bipolar and had problems. Well, come to find out, he was going rogue and creating all kinds of problems that we're getting blamed for. And she's like, "Wow, what are you gonna do? No good deed goes unpunished." wow. But I don't know. That kind of reminds me of the story about the guy that went up in the mountains and found the snake, and the snake was frozen, and so he picked the snake up, warmed it up, and nursed it back to health, and the thing bit him, and he said, "Well, what'd you bite me for?" He said, "Well, you knew I was a snake." Oh man. Well, I understand Lila James is going to be calling in sometime soon, I understand.
Who is?
Lila James. This is something that Mac Boogaloo lined up, apparently, and that she was going to call in probably sometime in the next 15, 20 minutes, I guess, maybe around 8:15, something like that. And at least I guess it was something that was tentative. And so we may have now she is a Dene activist. She's a Santa Fe Indian School graduate, and she's also a singer, I understand. Lila June. It's Lila June, not Lila Jane. Lila June Johnston is her legal name, and I'm hoping that she'll call in and give us a report, because she's up on the front lines. And yeah, sorry about that. I didn't know whether you knew who she was or not, but
I think I heard her song the other day.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think she wrote a song for the pipeline protest.
Right.
For the water protectors. Mm-hmm.
Well, we might have her on the program here if her luck holds. But,
well, that'd be great.
Yeah, it would. It would. It'd be wonderful. And I was hoping to get out a little bit early, so maybe Mark could do a mind glyph reading on her, and which is always fun. Go ahead.
Well, it was interesting because there were several words that was in her poem that she read as she was reading it. Several things came to my mind, but one of them was that, you know, one of the things I think is hopeful, and I had a bunch of friends right before 2012 that really wanted me to go out and promote and even make money off of it, and that was that, you know, during the readings I usually say, you know, around the year 1997-98, there was a change in people, and that includes me as well, but it was also during that time that I was given what amounts to a new Mayan calendar, grown out of the current Mayan calendar. And I think that it's good to talk about that sometimes, because it gives hope that if why would you have a new calendar if everything's going to go to hell in a handbasket and there ain't any hope? But the reason I bring it up is because several of the words that she used in her poem, when I was given that, I was given essentially 9 new symbols. And several, I was given 5 new glyphs and 4 new day numbers for a total of 9. And several of the words that you used in your poem are actually literally the name of those new glyphs. So I'll go through them real quick. So given 4 new day numbers. The first one was truth. Second day number was light, a spiraling light. And that's in the Lakota, that would be skanskan. And the next one after light was all, or universal, or all, the whole thing. And the fourth new day number was love, but not just love, never ending love. And then we go to the 5 new glyphs. First one was balance. Second one was joy. Third one was purpose. Fourth one was peace. And fifth one was harmony or creator. And several of those words of those 9 new symbols were in your poem. I know
my
joy and harmony was. I forget what else was. And then you've mentioned about love. Yeah.
Balance. I didn't talk about purpose, but purpose is essential in my life.
So now I came to learn later, not at the time, because at the time I struggled with being given this, and I didn't really, almost threw it away. And I came to be aware that the one that the Hopi and the ones in Central America and around Tepeyac and Teotihuacan, they have a Spider Woman down there too. And the Hopi talk about Spider Woman, the Zuni, and different tribes.
Mm-hmm.
But she was involved in that new Zulkan, or the growth of the current Zulkan calendar into what I was given. She was involved in giving me that information. And then I learned, last time, apparently, there was a Zuni guy in, I think, the Dogwood clan. And I've heard a story that Spider-Woman came to him, talked to him, didn't necessarily physically appear, but just kind of, the story was she whispered in his ear or something, right? And he received information about a bundle, but also a change to their calendar. And I read that story and I go, wow, that's kind of interesting. I didn't get nothing about a bundle, but I definitely got a change in the calendar with those 9 new symbols. So as you're reading those poems, that popped into my head about that. So I thought, something told me I was supposed to share this and talk about it anyway. So I did.
That's the way it's supposed to work too, because anytime Creator does anything, that affects us, he's going to tell a human, and he's going to tell 2 or 3 to make sure that it's a law of 2 or 3 witnesses. That's what the Christians call it, and so they always expect that, you know, if something's going to be coming in from Creator, that they're going to be hearing it from more than one source, and that is good to hear. You know, there's another cycle that is working in our favor right now. Now, being somewhat of a libertarian, I like to watch Glenn Beck, and Glenn Beck is always talking about prophecy, and he'll tell you he doesn't get the dates real good, even though he does. But he has long studied things like the Kondratiev wave, the fourth churning, and I don't know whether these things that you heard about, but the fourth turning is about 20-year cycle. But he had another gentleman that was on the program that just this week had written a book in 2012 called The Pendulum. And because he discovered the 40-year cycle in the Bible, and so he started going back over 3,000 years, and it proved out, you know, every 80 years we get this resurgence. He says the Western world is on a completely different cycle from the Orient. He said that's the reason. You know, it used to be when you thought of people in the Orient, you thought of people that would work together and cooperative, and not anymore. You know, that's the way it was 40 years ago. And so that's the reason why, you know, during the Olympics, you know, you saw these people. It's the difference between the rugged generation, or the rugged individualist, as opposed to, you know, the community and doing things together for the common good. And he said right now we're on the same kind of trend that was going on 40 years ago, and also going back exactly 8 years ago, 1936, and it was during that period of time when the world woke up and decided that they had to work together, you know, to do away with evil. But there are a lot of different things, and things are looking real good. And he says this regeneration will peak out. It's on the upswing right now, and will peak out in 2021, and then and this will be going on for quite some time, and it'll be another 40 years before people, sometime in the next 20 years, we'll kind of lose that momentum, and we'll kind of mourn for what we lost, and then things will turn around. And he says that's just the way people are, and I guess individual humans go through this same kind of thing too, and because I've heard stories about this one Jewish rabbi. He says, "Oh, when I graduated from seminary, I was out to convert the world, and by the time I was middle aged, I wondered if I was going to convert my own family, and now I'm 80, and I'm wondering if I'm going to convert myself." So, you know, nothing's more inevitable than change, but we're definitely got some cycles, human cycles, market cycles, and spiritual cycles that are all pushing us forward. And Beck pointed out that, and according to the fourth turning, the generation that was just born after 2000, he says, just like their counterparts, you know, before, during World War II, they're going to save the world. And what's pretty much, you know, the vast majority of them, you know, the scales are off their eyes. They don't have any hope that, you know, any particular party is going to save them, and so they're going to be doing things differently, and we should expect to see new ideas that are probably very old ideas, you know, coming to the fore. But I was pretty pessimistic up until recently, because I've been watching this stuff for, you know, longer than 30 years, because I was kind of brought up with it. But I was pretty pessimistic in the last few years, but now I'm seeing, hey, you know, there's actually a chance that something good, you know, could come of this. And so I'm gratified.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I still go through days when I sort of fall into the pit. Is it ever going to change? Yeah. But on the whole, I really do see an upswing. And I never gave my mother credit for being the wise woman that she was until recently, okay? But there are several things that she used to say that didn't make sense to me at the time that make complete sense now. And one of them is that the pendulum always has to swing both ways before it comes to center. And, you know, that 80-year cycle you're talking about, many of the grandmothers that I talk to have noticed that their children are their complete opposite, but their grandchildren are as awake as they are. So that has something to do with that 40-80 cycle, yeah?
That's right.
My own daughter knows all the ceremonies, and if she's in a pinch, she'll practice them.
Right.
But the rest of the time, she's just a regular American, yeah? My granddaughter, on the other hand, got it when she was 4 years old, and she's kept it. So it's a pretty interesting thing, the way that humanity works. And, of course, all the technologies that we use today, as a matter of course, have been invented in her lifetime. She's 32 now, and I used the very first Macintosh PC when she was born.
Yeah.
And everything else has come since then. So this girl not only got the ancient principles that we live by, but she's incorporated that into a very modern lifestyle.
Well, it could be done.
That some sort of leap, I'm not sure always what it is, but I certainly watch it, and I'm very interested and intrigued by how she blends the two.
Yep. Well, yeah, you know, and I mean, I'm going to be 62 in December, and I certainly regret a lot of the hard time I gave my parents, because it wasn't what they were saying; it was the way they were doing it. You know, they weren't holding their mouth right when they punished me. But you know, I mean, there were some. I had a tendency, and still do, I have to be very careful not to be cruel. And it was just a really mixed-up situation in my family because it was a lot of illness, a lot of stress and everything. And my dad and I, you know, should have hit it off a lot better, but we just didn't. And I think we will when we get together in the spirit world. But, yeah, it didn't help that he was constantly using Ban Roll-On, which has aluminum in it, and eating Rolaid, which has aluminum in it. Well, you know, hey, by 60, I could tell he was starting to have memory problems, you know. And I think he suspected it, too, because whenever I would, you know, usually gently, I'd point out, well, Dad, don't you remember? And he'd get mad, and he'd say, well, what do you think, I'm going senile? Well, no, I didn't know what was going on, but it got a lot worse. It got a lot worse. And, you know, now we're understanding that occasional cannabis use can help people. Well, I mean, the government has, they've got, at least Health and Human Services has a patent on CBDs, you know, to help protect our the sheaths of our nerves. And that's interesting because cannabis prohibition came about, you know, almost exactly 80 years ago, and here we are. Right back again, looking at this other thing. And but they're up against, you know, the big oil, because they replaced the hemp oil that was used for lubrication, and they're up against the beer lobby and the wine lobby and everything else. And thankfully, we can thank the fact that we're having problems with the economy because the politicians are seeing dollar signs. So it's really interesting, and I'm so glad that we're not like Switzerland or some other country, you know, instead of having one little laboratory, you know, for democratic principles, we've got 50 of them. And, you know, the founding fathers are really taking a, because of some misinformation that's out about them. And, you know, particularly nowadays from, you know, our black or African brothers and sisters, you know, they're being taught things that simply weren't true. You know, that the founders were pro-slavery, and the furthest thing could be from the truth. I mean, you know, Jefferson, it was illegal for him. He couldn't give or sell his slaves, and you know, others of them tried, and they did as soon as they could, and they made sure that you know, no more slaves were going to be imported into the country after. But it was, and eventually we fought a war, and 600,000 people died. But I don't know. There's a real movement, you know, particularly from our friends over on the kind of the left side of things. You know, they want people to believe things that weren't true about the way the country was founded, and it's gainsaying. You know, because they know that people aren't going to read it and search it out for themselves. Which any native medicine person will tell you, do not believe anything I tell you. You go learn for yourself. Well, people are lazy, and you know they'll believe a lot of people. Probably half the country will believe anything the media says. So wow, it's kind of dicey. But I think it's, I don't know, it's just, I guess the poet Yeats said it, you know, the center will not hold. So, here we go.
Hang on for the ride.
Boy, well, at least we live in interesting times. There was a philosopher back 200 years ago, he says, may you live in interesting time.
Yeah. I think they're all interesting times.
Yeah.
One of the things that I find quite interesting right now is how few people, first of all, how our schools are not educating people
uh-huh.
in the history and I'm not even talking about Native American history, in any of the history of our country,
yep,
none of the kids seem to know what the Constitution even is, let alone be able to quote parts of it. They don't
yep.
understand any of the legal issues around the First, Second, Third, Fourth Amendments and so forth. And, you know, that's a shame. I'm
well,
very
know,
glad I grew up when I did because I got all that.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm a Second Amendment guy, but I'll be the first person to point out, hey, you know, everybody wants a gun and you want to talk about militia? Okay. You know, I was a militia officer. Not a rough militia, a state militia. And it wasn't federal, it was state only. And I learned about militia laws in history. Well, you know, back, you know, 200 years ago, yeah, you were required to have a gun in your house, but somebody came around there every once in a while to make sure, just like they do in Switzerland, that it's being kept properly and it's kept lubricated and ready to go into service at any time. And, you know, you're not going to get people in this country to light out for that kind of thing. And, you know, given the police state we're living in, maybe they're right. I don't know. But, and, you know, there was a progressive that a couple of years ago actually wrote a little article about that, and nobody ever, it didn't, you know, get many eyes on it, but I went, oh, well, hey, there's a guy that knows his history. But,
yeah.
No, go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to agree with you. You know what? I remember a conversation with my daughter-in-law, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago when GPS first came on all the cell phones.
Yeah.
And I was saying something to her about right to privacy. And her response, and it was a very true response, is, why would I want a right to privacy? I didn't grow up with any privacy.
Yeah.
And on top of that, you know, if I'm caught on a mountaintop with a flat tire, I want somebody to be able to find me.
Yeah.
Yeah? And I thought, wow, how different a world she lives in from the world I grew up in. Because when I went into the forest and up into the mountains, I darn well didn't want anybody to know where I was.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a room for that rugged individual, you know, even during the times of the we generation, you know, we do need people that are we-minded to remind us all about how to be a rugged individual. And it can be done. I've been doing it for 40 years, I think.
Yeah, me too. And the point for me is that I'm both. I need those times of solitude and privacy and being just me and the Creator and my relatives out in the wilderness.
Yeah.
But I also need the times with community and the hearth fire and co-creation and learning and growing and understanding together.
Yeah. Yep. Well, when I learned that, you know, was it two censuses ago, you know, they were GPS and, you know, everybody's front door. Well, why? We've got an address system. Why does the government have to have enough information to put a sparrow missile through a window, you know?
Yeah.
It's just nuts. It's crazy. And now I do... I do think a lot of people really think that they're under surveillance or being listened to. Well, there's a big difference between metadata, and yeah, there's a lot of metadata. You know, it's not necessarily you're under surveillance. Is that, you know, they know who called who and when and where they were at and so forth when they called them. And, you know, even the head of the CIA or NSA, whatever, I can't remember, one or the other, he said, hey, he says, I wouldn't turn my computer on unless I put a piece of black tape over the camera. It's just stupid. And because there isn't a computer can't be hacked into. And as far as I know, if they can get into your camera, then they can figure out when you're – they can't They can't hack you unless your computer's on. And but they want to make sure you're not around, because if people see their mouse going around and they're not running it, then that's how they get into systems. At least what little I know about hacking. But the other thing, the Founding Fathers, they never foresaw that this country would be much more than an agricultural-based society. Well, now we've got the same, for 100 years or more, we've had the same cultural problems that they had in Europe overcrowding. I was an executive with the Boy Scouts when I graduated from college back in 79, and I was really shocked to learn that the whole scouting movement was started back in the 1890s by Lord Baden-Powell. He had used young kids in South Africa during the Boer War to act as messengers. And when he became a huge hero in England, and he looked around and in his writings, he wrote a book called, I'll think of it here in a minute. But they had the exact same social problems we do today in London and every other big city. Drug abuse, homelessness, gangs. Nothing's changed. And so he just decided, well, look, he figured out a way to funnel all that youthful energy. He took a bunch of boys out to a place called Gilwell Island, and he split them up into small teams, five, six, or seven patrols, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten kids, and that's a troop. And he put them in competition against each other, friendly competition. And that's the scouting method. And the scouting method works when they use it. Most of my service was in Utah, some in California. But I noticed that they weren't really using the scouting method, because every little congregation, even though there was only five or six kids, they all want to have their own troop. And it was a numbers thing, too, and they should have had, every one of those troops should have been patrols of a larger troop. And, the most people in scouting will tell you that, Mormons have got they produce so many Eagle Scouts, they got the best scouting system. Well, not really, because if you're not an Eagle by the time you're 13, if you're a Mormon, your chances are you're not going to get it, because they're going to stop pushing you to get you through. And I also knew there was a lot of requirements that are being winked at, or kids being allowed to slide through, because let's just call it what it is, dishonesty. And but there are systems in whether it's a tribe or a troop or whatever, there are ways, like a clan, there are ways to get things done. And I was shocked the first stomp dance I went to at the incredible wisdom of the way the Cherokee clan system was set up, where there was clans that only did certain things or collected certain things, and then the clan across the fire, they had, in order to do the things they were supposed to do, they had to cross the fire, go to that other clan to get the things that they were forbidden for. In other words, people had to work together symbiotically, and yes, it also kept the gene pool going, and it was of course, when Europeans came along, our Cherokees, they'd mate with anything at two legs, so it was also traditional to, they understood the gene pool, thousands of years ago. And our prophecies tell us that, thousands of years ago, we lived in cities that had tall buildings, and there was great destruction, and things were different now. So, but there were still things that carried through all those thousands of years through the wisdom that our elders have.
Mm-hmm. Every indigenous nation that I've ever visited that has a clan system, you can't marry somebody in your own clan close a cousin. And it prevented things like Down syndrome and cerebral palsy and all kinds of things that are rampant now.
Well, I've been reading about the Lakota have taken a look at their diet, and they said a big upsurge in autism. And so they said, well, look, you know, for thousands of years, our children, once they were weaned, they never had milk again. And just taking kids off of cow's milk for 4 days has proven to show a lot of good things. And, I mean, yeah, we buried one Bear Clan Dene elder back in the late 90s. His father and grandfather both lived to be well over 100 years old. He was in his 60s, and they were always already cutting things off him because of diabetes. And he just said, you just would not believe, how many Navajo there are in dialysis. And he said, yep, it's because of the refined, the white sugar, white flour, everything. And that was also right during the time when the two Navajo deities appeared up at Rocky Ridge on the, I think it was the 5th of May, 4th or 5th of May of 90s. Let me get this right, 96, yeah. And they were told, hey, if you, there's just a couple women living up there. They hosted the Sundance up there, and there was an old grandmother, and she hadn't spoken in years, and she was living with, I think her daughter-in-law was in her 40s. And they heard this kind of a whistle, kind of like a, like when a bomb drops, the whistle and boom, like that. And they heard this, and the old woman said, we've got company. Hadn't spoken in years, and she says, we've got company. And then the younger woman opens the front door, and there's these two Navajos standing about a foot off the ground in a circle of corn, white corn, and they were there to give a message. And that was interesting.
Well, right after that, there were thousands of people that were making pilgrimages that... It was a real scene, and I've got, I guess it was written up in the 3 of the Arizona newspapers about what happened. I've got a copy of that, a couple of them on my website at NativeAmericanProphecy.com. Well, look, we're getting short on time, I guess.
So if you don't mind, I'd like to put our websites out there, too.
Oh, absolutely. Go ahead.
One is worldwisdomgatherings.org. We have a fundraiser going right now, and we really need help with this. In order to be able to pay elders' expenses, we need to raise money so that these elders can come to these wisdom gatherings. We can't afford to pay for it. We're a nonprofit, and all of us work on our talent. We don't take any salaries or anything like that. But we do want to be able to pay the elders' ways to come to these gatherings. So we're a fairly new organization. We've only been in existence for about 5 or 6 years. We don't take any kind of grant funding or anything like that. It all comes from donation from people who want to support these gatherings. And these wisdom gatherings are growing by leaps and bounds. We've been invited to coordinate wisdom gatherings now in 4 different countries this next year. And to be able to support these elders to come, to have housing and food and comfort while they're there, to share their experience, strength, and hope with us, this is really important. So if people want to go to the website, it's worldwisdomgatherings.org. I also facilitate something called Dance to Heal the Earth. And this came from my personal experience. 30 years ago, I was told that all the ceremonies originated through the women. They were given to the women first, whether it was through White Buffalo Calf Woman, through the Cherokee Woman Warrior. They came to the women first. And I was invited at that time to restore a woman's Sundance on land that I had up by my tribe. I was too young, and the land was too fragile, so I didn't accept that invitation, but I held the vision. In 2014, I survived a massive landslide. A mountain came down on me and 43 others, and only 9 of us survived that. When I was underneath the mud and the water, I heard Mother Earth crying. She didn't want that mountain to come down. It came down through neglect and misuse. And it was unstable ground anyway, but the neglect and misuse that was put on it with the logging and so forth, with other landslides that had happened that they'd improperly shored up, destabilized the mountain to the point where 30,000 cubic tons of mud came down in 3 minutes.
We all remember that. We all remember that. And you know what? I think, didn't ABC interview you?
Yes.
I thought you looked awful familiar because I'm pretty good with faces. So that was the first time I saw you was, I think the guy that interviewed, I think it was Tom. Well, anyway, that's okay. My memory's reaching for details that aren't there anymore.
Anderson Cooper also interviewed me.
Yeah.
So you might have seen him on that. And there's also a NOVA program called Killer Mudslides. That's pretty informative about the systems that could have been put in place that at least would have given us adequate warning. However, that's all a whole other subject that's way too deep to go into right now. But what I came out of that landslide with was Mother asking me to be a voice, a bigger voice for her, which is why I'm so concerned about things like the Dakota Access Pipeline and so forth. And sustainable energy systems and all those things. But she also asked me to bring people together, to dance in celebration of life, to the tree of life, to give thanks and to learn through vision and through focus on the tree what our part is, how we can help and serve Mother Earth. So my website for that is dancetohealtheearth.org. And we are dancing in many countries in the world. It's been a profound ceremony. It is not a sun dance. It is not the original Cherokee women's dance to heal the earth, because that dance hasn't been done in so many centuries. Nobody knows how to do it. This dance was given in guidance and vision and supported by grandmothers around the world. So if people are interested in that dance, all they have to do is email me or one of the coordinators in the country that they're in. And those who come find that they have profound changes in their life, deep ceremony. So I can't say any more than that, and I really thank you for the time tonight. I sure enjoyed our conversation. It's been wonderful.
I've got your link up. Right at the top, worldwisdomgathering.org. And I made notes a little bit. Go ahead.
It's gatherings with an S.
Oh, okay. I'll get that changed. Okay, good deal. I guess we're going to continue to try to connect up with Lila Jane maybe next week.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much.